You're listening to episode 22 of The Gear Heart. I'm your reader, writer, and host, Alex White. Renee White is the voice of our female characters. Good news, listeners. While I was at Dragon Con, I was interviewed by P.G. Holyfield, author of the serialized podcast Murder at Avedon Hill. If you're interested in my thoughts on podcasting, or you'd like to hear the rest of Mr. Holyfield's excellent story, swing by pgholyfield.com. If you haven't had a chance yet or you're listening on iTunes, you can stop by the Gearheart blog and interact at www.thegearheart.com, or you can email me directly at alex@thegearheart.com. Don't forget that you can also follow us on Twitter, username TheGearheart. And now, settle in, pour a cup of tea, and enjoy as we bring you more tales of the Gearheart. Last time on The Gearheart, Agent Manners reveals to Cog the true nature of the Hangman, sending her fleeing into the garden. Even with Cog's weakened state, the Seeress's warnings burn bright in Jonathan's mind. When Jonathan tells his companion of their upcoming encounter with Wyland, it proves too much for her to bear. Can they sort it out? Find out on The Gearheart. "To what?" asked Buskerton. His tattered clothes were still stained with the blood of the guards. His hands were caked with muck and gore, though they seemed delicate, like the hands of a pianist now. Buskerton had cleared the guardhouse at the entrance to the sewers with little trouble, but he knew it wouldn't last. More guards would definitely be on their way. Buskerton had every indication that Crust had failed. The biggest indicator, of course, was the fact that Crust held his own decapitated head in his hands when he emerged from the tunnels into the icy culvert outside the castle.
"We're guarding them, old boy. Surely you're not that hard of hearing,"
cried Wallaby in her new body's voice. Crusted blood still scabbed around her nose, and Wallaby picked at it as she spoke.
"Wallaby," said Buskerton, "did it ever occur to you that there is no way that body sounds as foolish as you?"
"Ah, very well. How's this?"
"Ain't we supposed to kill them?"
came Crust's gravelly intonations. The other two were actually surprised to see the decapitated man talk. It was strange to watch. The voice magically issued from Crust's mouth, but the tattered remains of his throat flexed and shivered with glottal motion. Ice coated Crust's duster, and Wallaby wondered for a moment if Crust would be able to speak were he just a pile of parts.
"You, my fractious fusilier, were supposed to stop Andrews from meeting Agent Manners. We three were only ever supposed to fetch the Gearheart or bring forth Auden Slade. We did that. Nicholas never said we were supposed to keep Auden Slade in the open."
"But I broke my contract. I'll owe Nicholas a favor," said Crust.
"What if he forces Crust to kill us?" asked Buskerton, adjusting his glasses.
"A word from Nicholas and Crust will turn on us." Wallaby laughed, though it seemed less hearty without her old body.
"Pish-tosh. We'll kill the blighter before he has the chance. Besides, the Seeress didn't pay in money."
"She invoked the laws of sacrifice," said Buskerton with widened eyes.
Buskerton and Crust closed upon Wallaby, tense with anticipation.
"It was magnificent,"
said Wallaby, gesturing to herself.
"She gave me this woman's body and her own life."
"They ain't all forgotten us then,"
croaked Crust, approximating a happy face. His idea of a smile was the faintest upturn of his lip's edge, but it only served to make him look hungry or murderous.
"Some still know the old ways."
"She certainly understands us better than Nicholas," said Buskerton. "How did you take her?"
"It wasn't very elegant, actually. I didn't have my knife,"
said Wallaby.
"Had to use my boot."
"Where are her brains, noise?"
asked Crust, inching closer.
I bet they were nice.
Wallaby's mischievous smile played across Faye's face, but something seemed wrong on the young woman.
Stupendous old sport. They were the most delightful shade, like a maiden's lips in the gray light of a storm.
Buskerton began to salivate. Through his parted lips, Wallaby could see his teeth sharpening to points.
Did you eat anything? Did you bring us anything?
Wallaby grimaced.
Of course, I ate her whole body with this delicate little girl's mouth. Then I cut off a hand to bring out here for the lot of you to snack upon.
Then, seeing Buskerton's expectation.
Don't be an idiot, Buskerton. How was I supposed to get past the Queensman covered in the Seeress's blood?
I don't know, friend, but I thought you wouldn't come back empty-handed, said Buskerton.
I didn't come back empty-handed, my quibbling confederate,
said Wallaby.
We have a whole extra body to eat.
Those words prompted Buskerton and Crust to inch closer, and Buskerton's fangs grew too long to hide. His jaw distended, and his tongue whipped about in his mouth. Viscera dripped from his maw as his petite hands grew into wicked claws. Wallaby made no motion to stop his advance, as Buskerton asked in an acidic voice,
So we're getting a better meal then, eh?
Wallaby looked to Crust, who had nonchalantly tucked his head under his arm and drawn a rusty fork and knife. The old one licked his cracked lips and eyed Wallaby's supple young form. Wallaby took a deep breath.
No, you're not eating this one, you gluttons. I'm keeping this body for myself.
Buskerton leapt at Wallaby, face drawn with incredulous fury. His claws swiped wildly at Wallaby's tiny throat, but a gunshot pierced Buskerton's forehead before he could get any closer. Wallaby brought the smoking muzzle to his lips and blew the cordite cloud away.
Down, boy!
She barked.
Wallaby turned to Crust, who still held his utensils, with a slightly forlorn look upon his face.
We ain't gonna eat her, then.
Do you not tire of sounding like a boar? Ain't isn't a word. And just so you know, no, we ain't.
On the icy ground, Buskerton's hands shot to his forehead, which had been cored like an apple.
Damnation, Wallaby!
He screeched.
I swear on our true names that I will kill you again and again for that! Do you hear me?
Buskerton.
Wallaby cooed.
No, Wallaby, I'm serious. You have crossed the line this time.
Buskerton.
I am going to rip off your face and tear you out of that pretty little body, and then I'll put you in the body of a tuberculosis-infected octogenarian with a skin disorder, and then I'm going to...
Buskerton!
Shouted Wallaby.
We're eating my old body.
Buskerton considered that as the bullet wound closed upon itself.
Quantity over quality, is it?
Crust mumbled.
I rather like the fatty ones, actually.
Indeed,
breathed Wallaby.
Oh, right-ho then, said Buskerton. Let's leave before they come and investigate the shot.
They towered over him, the council barristers. They sat atop a dais that stood 10 feet above Jonathan's position. The dais curved around him with one barrister on each side to make the harbinger feel surrounded by hostile eyes. 25 counselors sat in lavish opera boxes, which hung from the walls. They watched the harbinger attentively, some on the edge of their chairs, some with their hands on the railing. Angels and devils danced across the gold filigree wood carvings that adorned every wall, leering and smiling at Jonathan with their frozen expressions. Golden light fell from the glass mosaic in the ceiling, splashing shadows across the faces of the barristers. It was the middle of the night, and the young harbinger briefly wondered whether the windows were powered by electricity or magic. Jonathan stepped onto a platform in the center of the room and held his head high.
Impertinent,
mumbled one of the barristers, staring down at the harbinger. Jonathan said nothing. He had not yet been asked to speak. However, Jonathan had no doubt they would call upon him to explain everything at least once, given the way they had summoned him. 3 Queensmen appeared shortly after Jonathan found his way back to the infirmary. and demanded Jonathan make an appearance before the council. He was furious. Jonathan wanted to speak to Isabel and comfort her as the seeress had suggested in the letter. And, at the very least, Jonathan wanted some sleep. He had little doubt that there was something foul about, given the time of day of the council session.
"Initiate Andrews," said the first barrister. "I am Barrister McKinney, and we have convened this evening to discuss the matter of the seeress's death. As the one holding the highest office under her command prior to her untimely demise, we believe that you possess unique information regarding the killer or killers. It is my hope that you will choose to cooperate in these matters, as the alternative will be highly unfortunate. Any attempt to conceal the truth will be construed as high treason. We will begin this probe by asking for your report, initiate."
McKinney's face was locked in stern rebuke for the young man on the platform. Jonathan met his gaze without flinching, even though the light from above stung his unblinking eyes. The barrister was dressed in the most officious of robes. Embroidered lions coursed across its fabric, and a white ascot spilled over the front. His seeker ring was also unlike any that Jonathan had ever seen, glazed over with glowing gemstones. Jonathan said nothing. The barristers were often referred to as hens of the council, and Jonathan finally understood why. In matters of court, the barristers presided over the proceedings, able to arrest, detain, and render judgment, provided that the council did not object. Even their seating made them look like the arms of the nameless men and women before him. Jonathan had also heard the rumors of barristers McKinney and Neely's harsh judgments before, further reinforcing the idea that these men were the true executors of the council's will.
"Initiate!"
shouted the other barrister, whom the bailiff had introduced as Neely when the official had entered the council chambers. Jonathan's eyes leapt to the other man.
"Do you understand the gravity of this hearing?"
"I do, Your Honor," Jonathan began. "But I believe there has been a failure to follow protocol. I was not debriefed before entering these chambers, and so there are things you don't yet know."
Barrister McKinney sighed petulantly.
"Yes, Initiate Andrews, we're not in full possession of the facts, and so you are here before us. We do not want you to take the time during a debriefing to prepare a statement for the council. The council demands candor, and that will be achieved by putting you on the spot. Do not test us by answering anything other than our questions, Initiate."
Jonathan's eyes narrowed. If he was going to make his play, he was going to have to do it now.
"Don't test us. Barrister McKinney, I believe you are making a grave mistake, speaking to a harbinger like that."
The council chambers exploded into angry shouts and quickened whispers. Several of the councillors arose and shouted orders at nearby queensmen. Most of the older councillors, however, remained seated, merely observing. Both barristers slammed down their gavels in rapid succession, failing to drown out the shots of the outraged councillors. They laced their furious pleas for order with a surprising number of epithets. In a very strange way, they made Jonathan quite proud of the ruckus he caused. Finally, Barrister Neely's gavel slammed so hard that the shaft fractured and the instrument snapped in twain. It seemed to take a very long time for the hammerhead to strike the floor, but when it did, all were silent.
"Initiate Andrews,"
Neely hissed, his white knuckles clutching the broken haft of the gavel.
"How dare you presume so much when you are in so perilous a situation? You no longer have any rank, with no one to grant it to you. Your provisional status has been revoked with the death of the seeress, which you probably caused."
Barrister Neely hurled the stake down at Jonathan, and it harmlessly bounced off the young man's chest. Jonathan cocked an eyebrow at Barrister Neely, and the robed man scowled back.
"I'm not sure I'd make myself clear," said Jonathan.
"No, Initiate Andrews," said
Barrister McKinney, his hands folded in front of his chest.
"It is obvious that we are the ones who have failed in the task of clear communication. Allow me to elucidate.
You now stand accused of conspiring to assassinate the Seeress, the highest ranked member of the Seekers of the Arcane Unknown. Should you be found guilty, the penalty would be death, and your mortal coil would be forfeit.
Two queensmen stepped forward to flank Jonathan, drawing knives. Barrister McKinney continued,
And should that happen, I promise you that I will remit you to the custody of our counter-interrogation specialists, who will use any and all means necessary to test the limits of the human body and mind before putting you out of your well-deserved misery. That way, at least a traitor like you can be of some worth to this organization.
McKinney leaned all the way forward, cloaking all but his nose in shadow.
And please don't embarrass yourself by calling upon that pathetic ancestor of yours to help you escape.
That won't be necessary, Barrister McKinney.
McKinney leapt to his feet, red with rage.
You will address me as your honor, or we will forgo the trial!
No, I will not. I will address you any way I please, because...
Jonathan began.
Throw this fool in the brig!
Screamed Neely over Jonathan.
Get him out of here! Do it now, Queensman! Because I have a letter of mark!
Jonathan shouted back. The two barristers froze. Jonathan took a deep breath and began to speak.
The last act that the Seeress committed was to give me a letter of mark that expires when the hangman's head lies upon that barrister's table up there, he said.
Then he turned to the Queensman next to him and said,
I'm going to take it out of my pocket. Please don't stab me.
The Queensman nodded, and Jonathan removed the crumpled letter from his pocket. The bailiff made his way to the witness stand and took the letter from the harbinger. Jonathan could swear that the bailiff seemed happy, or at the very least intrigued. After a moment of examination and the casting of a spell that Jonathan could not recognize, the bailiff spoke.
The Seeress's hand was the last one to touch this paper before the harbinger. I hereby authenticate this evidence.
Both of the barristers looked as though they were having heart attacks. They began shuffling through the thick, leather-bound codices of Seeker Law hidden behind their desks in total panic. The council chambers rang out with the urgent, hushed whispers of the frightened counselors, signaling their assistants and runners to take various actions. Jonathan smiled.
And that means that, until Nicholas Antonello lies dead, no court of the Seekers, save for a unanimous council vote, can stop me.
You have no jurisdiction, barristers, and I resent you interfering with my mission.
But McKinney was ignoring Jonathan.
Counselors!
He shouted to the opera boxes around him.
I urge you, we must vote this very moment! Right now, to strip Harbinger Andrews of...
Jonathan did not attempt to dissuade McKinney and Neely from calling a vote from the gathered council. He looked to both of the Queensmen and spoke simply.
Arrest those two barristers by order of the Seeress. Stop them from continuing to corrupt the council.
Jonathan did not even receive an acknowledgement from the Queensmen. There was a flicker of magic, and the dark-suited warriors each stood behind a now unconscious barrister. Barrister McKinney did not even have time to fall before his Queensmen threw him to the ground and began to search him for weapons. Barrister Neely unceremoniously tumbled into his assailant's arms as though he had merely fainted. A collective gasp whispered through the hall like a breeze through a forest clearing.
Counselors, said Jonathan, holding up a hand in a gesture of humility. I know that what I have just done seems shocking to many of you, and I understand that you might be worried. The idea that one of us Seekers, other than the infinitely wise Seeress, could possess unchecked power must be frightening. However, I pledge that I am moving to uphold her last wishes, and I seek to deliver our world from peril.
Those are the words of every newborn tyrant, Harbinger,
said the distant voice of an elderly counselor from one of the opera boxes.
You're probably right, counselor, said Jonathan. But I'm leaving all the same, and I'm going to pursue the hangman. If any of you attempt to call a vote against me while I am in these chambers,
I'll have the Queensmen arrest you.
He scanned the wide eyes of the counselors. Judging from the barristers, it will be an unpleasant process. The more fragile ones of you may not survive the ordeal. Bailiff, my letter of marque, if you please. Jonathan looked back at the great doors that opened into the administrative wing of the palace as the bailiff handed him his paper. Four queensmen stood on guard, ready to stop trouble. There did not seem to be any sign of confusion upon their faces. They understood who was in command. You four, Jonathan said. Come with me. What has Jonathan done? What will the council do when it finally comes to order? And was there any other way? And finally, what will become of the young agent that lies sleeping in the infirmary? Find out next time on the Gearheart. This podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 3.0 license. For more information, visit creativecommons.org.
This week's podcast has been brought to you by Summer Fresh Armadouche. Do you ever get that drenched in the blood of your enemies feeling? If you, like so many soldiers, tire of stinking of death after cutting a vicious swath across the battlefield in full plate mail armor, try Summer Fresh Armadouche and wash those worries away. For a deep clean with a silver sheen, Summer Fresh. And by Aunt Martha's Air Quotes, for when a sentence needs to go from great to great. Ever want to tell someone that you love them when you don't actually? Ever want to tell your guests that they're eating chicken when it's actually one of their pets? Well, with Aunt Martha's Air Quotes, you can. Next time someone wants to know what you think of something, just remember, Aunt Martha's Air Quotes, they make everything fun. And coming soon, Aunt Martha's Misplaced Apostrophes.